episode of MP Access. We are here today at the 5-Star Conference. My name is Ekaterina, and I am joined by Patrick O'Brien. Patrick, thank you so much for joining me today.
Sure,
thank you for
pleasure.
Your time. Yeah. You've spent 30 years in default mortgage servicing. Can you start by sharing how you first entered the space and what has kept you in it for so long?
Great question. I have worked in default mortgage servicing now for 30 years. And I, like so many of the folks that work in this industry, started early in my career in a collection center. In my family, you had to go to college, but you had to pay for it. So one of the things that I did early in my career was took a job at a mortgage servicing company that had some tuition reimbursement. It was one of the things that appealed to me. And so I started there, and I liked that it was active and you had an opportunity to learn things, and it's just kind of grown from there. So I've been fortunate enough now over the course of my career that I've worked at a variety of different companies within the mortgage servicing space, from large mortgage servicers to boutique asset management companies to default law firms, which is really where I've developed my specialization within management, is running foreclosure, bankruptcy, litigation operations across multi-states for foreclosure firms.
Nice. And from your perspective, what does the foreclosure life cycle really look like behind the scenes?
So I think this is a really interesting opportunity to kind of explain how this business works as a business, really, more so than a law firm, for folks that maybe aren't exposed to it. When I explain it to new hires or people that I'm interviewing or even folks that aren't within our industry, I refer to the default law practice within mortgage servicing as almost like an upside-down law firm, in that it's not traditional where it's, you know, one lawyer with some support staff of three and four, maybe paralegals or legal assistants within the default space, because we're really process driven, and we'll kind of get into that a little bit later. But it's inverse. There'll be multiple support staff for reviewing attorneys, litigation attorneys, managing attorneys. So you could have a much larger firm from a headcount perspective, but with less lawyers, right? That they're maybe not doing as much legal research, but they're doing more document review of what's produced by the staff. So from that perspective, the model is really inverse of what a traditional law firm looks like.
Can you walk us through how servicers and default law firms coordinate workflow and communication?
Sure. So the first thing that's important to understand about how a default law firm works is that the structure of it isn't like a hourly attorney firm would be, or a contingency law firm, right? So they're really the main models that exist today, that lawyers are paid a percentage of the case if they win, or hourlies if they're just completing a task. But within the mortgage servicing space, we're more or less governed under the Fannie Mae, FHFA, GSE-type fee structure, right? Which means that we are paid a set amount of money per legal milestone completed, right? So a lawsuit, you know, like any lawsuit, is going to have a complaint, it's going to have service of the complaint, it's going to have entry of judgment, and then execution upon that judgment. In this case, it's a sheriff's sale, a foreclosure sale, or depending on how the state is that you work. So law firms are paid upon completion of those milestones, right? Which is, from a standpoint, it's not a tremendous amount of money if you were to work it out over what a lawyer, accomplished lawyer, would be hourly. So you're really process driven, is that the legal staff is following processes, rules, and structures that we've established in conjunction with our servicing clients and our managing attorneys to build the product for the attorneys to review. And outside of contested cases, we're talking not routine, well, not that a foreclosure is ever routine, but non-contested cases on things that are the standard bread and butter of what the business is. So that from a structure standpoint on how that life cycle works, a lot of different things can happen, right? So you're paid a percentage at referral, you're paid a percentage at first legal, you're paid a percentage as you move down that process. But those cases, a lot of different paths can happen, or channels can happen. Of course, the homeowners could reinstate the loan, they can stop all the default action, they can come up with the amount that's due, they could sell the property, they could pay off the loan, they could refinance, they could enter into a loss mitigation or some type of repayment, or it will move through the entire cycle of the default action, resulting in a foreclosure, or, you know, some other scenario that could occur with the bankruptcy or litigation, et cetera. So that kind of frames, you know, how that works from a business standpoint on how the life cycle works. But at any given time, most firms like ours that are this size of Stern and Eisenberg or others are going to have about half of their inventory at any given time is in a hold status, that it's under loss mitigation review or it's being examined for some other type of workout or some other type of option, because, of course, foreclosures are a loss to everybody. It's a loss to a community. It's a loss to that individual family, that homeowner, and, frankly, to our clients, to servicers and their investors.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that they want to do or that they take lightly, but when they do, they want to be very deliberate and careful about how that process moves along.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see the biggest friction points in that process?
So communications, like any other volume practice, right? If you're moving a good amount of cases, you have to have good systems and good processes to communicate at the specific case level and at the loan level, right? Like understanding where your pipeline and where your portfolio is moving is great. Reporting that to your client having good reporting about how you're performing for them, as any vendor relationship and attorney and client relationship should work. But having a good communication channel. Most of our servicers and our servicing clients will use a processing system to communicate back and forth, to share documents, to understand what those things are. And then some of the smaller loan investors and loan servicers are really email-driven, which isn't ideal, of course, but you can do it that way. But just making sure that you're communicating effectively and then tracking the progress of that case through the process.
What operational milestones are the most crucial to firms to hit on time?
So really the metric that drives how I approach operations in all of our states and how my management team and our firm works is really the first legal action, which is most states it's called a complaint or publication in the non-judicial states. It's really about a file coming in and moving it to that first legal stage, because then you're setting the groundwork to perhaps drive a resolution with the homeowner, perhaps drive some type of loss mitigation, and importantly that our servicing client is meeting the requirements within their investor and servicing pools, whether it's for a government loan or a private investor, that they're hitting those milestones timely so that the loan could liquidate and there won't be any financial penalty to our client. And in turn, potentially the law firm, if we don't do those things effectively and timely as we're required to do. So that first legal complaint really drives all other components of the action.
What strategies do you use to keep cases moving forward?
So it's really about having a very robust case management system, having good exception reporting, and then having good operators, right? The team that you build to process and manage and handle exceptions for these things is what matters. So we have a fairly sophisticated case management system where I will know exactly where cases are in process and what it is that I need in order to move forward. So when we get a referral, it's important that we have certain legal documents. It's important that we have certain legal records. It's important that we have certain figures and accounting to ensure that the information that we have can be validated and we can move the process through. So tracking a file for the completeness when things come in and where they are and what you need and how you're following up in order to get those documents is vital. And then in most of our states, once we do have a firm attorney approved legal pleading, before that's going to get filed, our client is also going to review and approve it. They're going to verify it, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So we will provide that to them for that verification. And then tracking the timing of that verification coming back becomes very important as well, especially if there's a first legal deadline or if there's some other court mandated rule around statute of limitations or some other component, so that you're sharing that information with your client regularly. Like, hey, you have this. Are you aware? We're running out of time. Things are moving along. And, of course, we're incented to do that because that's how we're paid,
mm-hmm.
right? But importantly, if you're not managing your pipeline effectively and you're just worried about individual cases, then, you know, you're not going to be effective as a firm operation.
Mm-hmm. How does revenue actually flow through the foreclosure process for firms and servicers?
So cash flow and the revenue cycle for a law firm that is based on a flat fee structure like we're talking about, you know, having an effective billing operation and a revenue operation to ensure that that cycle moves quickly because, again, as we talked about earlier, on a flat fee structure, you're not waiting for a giant pile of money at the end of the process here. You have to be effective in moving it forward. And same thing goes for the servicers, right? They're making these advances to us and then they're filing claims with their investors to recover those dollars, unless they own the loans themselves, and they're going to be a little bit more careful. But most are paying those funds and then getting reimbursed through their claim process. So, again, the efficiency, the accuracy of the paperwork, and making sure that your systems are sharing that information on a regular basis is vital, because firms like ours, especially in judicial states, we will advance monies for sheriff deposits. We will advance monies for taxes or for amounts that are required to settle with the sheriff in a post foreclosure sale environment. So you, if you're not careful, you could have a significant amount of dollars on the street that aren't getting recovered quickly, and that could put tremendous strains on law firms. And there's plenty of examples of firms that didn't manage that effectively that are frankly no longer in our space today.
And how does that impact operational priorities?
So, well, anybody that does this for a living will tell you that the most important thing a law firm does is billing, right? So if you're not paying attention to that every day, then, you know, and again, it's important that you're moving cases, it's important that you're handling things in the courts, and you're important that you're doing all of those pieces. But if you're not paying attention to your business, again, you won't be doing this very long, and we've been doing it for over 30 years.
And also technology is changing everything, especially right now. What tools or systems are most impactful today in managing foreclosure workflows?
So, again, having an effective case management system with integrations with your client systems, having integrations with your vendors that you're using, whether it's process servers or title companies or whom it is that you, that all the partners that you have within the space, is, you know, table stakes really at this point. It's baseline. Really curious to see where we're going to be moving towards, you know, an AI type environment. Understandably, clients are very cautious about the use of AI, and we are too, but we think that as the technology develops and there's more closed systems available for that AI generation, it will represent more accuracy, more efficiency within our industry and within our firm space. Not that we've moved in that direction yet, but that's where I really think that we're likely going to be talking about here in a year or two with a rapid expansion. But again, today there is not a closed system, so it's kind of exploratory. But just using those tools that you have on the periphery to make sure that your documentation, your standard operating procedure, your training materials, all of those tools that are different than the work that you're doing are there, but that you have significant attorney oversight on every step and stage and compliance within your process.
Mm-hmm. There are different loan types.
Sure.
FHA, VA, GSE, conventional, HEC.
Noted. Yeah.
They all bring unique requirements. Which differences create the biggest challenges for firms and servicers?
Sure. So it's a real alphabet soup, right?
Yes.
That you talk about. And I could tell you what every one of those abbreviations stand for. But the difference, the main difference to really understand within a firm is the government loans, FHA loans, which make up HUD, and then there's VA on the other side of that. And HECM's a little bit as well. That's a home equity conversion mortgage or a reverse mortgage. But government loans, the servicer can face significant financial penalties if they don't meet certain milestones. If they don't file a first legal action by X day from the date of default, or if they fail to convey a property within a reasonable time, or they fail to complete a foreclosure within the acceptable state parameters within that. So there's financial risk to our clients on the servicer side, and in turn, there's financial risk to the firm, because if that delay was within the control of the firm, rightfully, a servicer and our client could say, hey, look, we suffered this loss because of the firm failure. We expect to be compensated for the loss that we face from our investor. So there's a little bit different risk profile that's there within the government loans. And then within the GSEs or even to the conventional standpoint, accuracy and speed become even more important, because if you're not doing that well within a volume practice, you won't be doing it very long.
What are some misconceptions the industry has about how law firms actually process and move these cases?
That's a great question, too. So we are the folks that are processing, right? Your foreclosure processors, your team leads, your supervisors are really an extension of a default mortgage servicing organization, right? The jobs that they are doing are very similar to what's happening inside of a servicing shop. My experience within the default space says that they're almost parallel, but the difference being on the firm side is that the processors on our team, those default foreclosure specialists, et cetera, are responsible to ensure that the thing happens, right? So whether that's a court pleading, whether that's a motion being filed, whether that's a response being filed with opposing counsel or whichever the case may be, they have to make sure that the thing gets done. It's not just checking off a box that you inform somebody to do something. You have to follow through all the way to get those things done and coordinate the movement of those pipelines all the way through. So I think that there's a common misconception that it's one person handling one file from the start to the finish, but we've really developed over time some subject matter expertise within the legal milestone event. So I'll have a first legal team, I'll have a service team, I'll have a judgment team who's able to understand all the rules of the local county, right? Like, you're dealing with hundreds of different counties within these multiple states, they're all going to have a slight variation and some nuance. So you have to build that into your rules and into your templates where your processors are going to be uniquely qualified to be able to handle that. The lawyers will know the state rules. They'll know the rules around how a process and a pleading has to happen. But it's often my processor that knows, you know, Jenny at the sheriff's office that can get the thing done because they've built a rapport over the years. And I think that's really important for people to understand.
And looking back at your own experience, what lessons have you learned about building efficiency and reducing risk in foreclosure operations?
So, that's a loaded question. A lot. Again, you know, I've been at this for a very long time, and it's about the team that you bring in to do this, and about how you creatively solve problems by communicating effectively and understanding your client's position, understanding what it is that they need. And that's where my servicing experience really comes into play, that I understand how they're thinking. I understand what it is that their investor is demanding of them and what it is that they're going to be required to do of where that potential loss could be. And then sharing that with my teams, and then my teams, then a light bulb goes off and it says, oh, okay, I was wondering why they were asking me that question and it didn't make any sense. So it's that you're trying to establish that connection between your teams, the clients, the courts, firm attorneys, outside counsel, and you're trying to bring this whole ecosystem together that everybody can understand. We're here to do something that's necessary and required. Let's make sure that we're communicating effectively with each other so that that happens.
Mm-hmm. And if you had to give servicers and investors one insider tip about working with default law firms more efficiently, what would it be?
So, again, back to the communications, right, that I would encourage investors and servicers that if something doesn't make sense, that you pick up the phone and you talk to your counterpart at that firm, that you ferret out what the problem is and then you fix it. Because it could be systemic. It could be a template. It could be a process. It could be integration and automation to feed into something that's pulling from a field that doesn't make sense for what that particular servicer need could be. And most of us are very agile and we're nimble. But having those conversations about what has to happen in order for this to work effectively is step one. And then we can solve pretty much all the world's problems, mm-hmm. I think.
Patrick, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And for sharing your deep expertise with us.